Love.
I apologize to everyone, as we were having difficulties, as you probably know. So I am not coming in like I normally do, but here we are on Word Sexy Radio anyway. And I know Trice is already here, so how are you doing?
Hi, I'm here and I'm doing great.
And you know, I had this thing all planned to have this great interest in music and all of that, like I always do. And Blog Talk Radio lets me down for the first time, and I don't know how long, but it's okay.
It's okay. That's right. We're here now.
Yeah, and I saw DV. I'm trying to get him to come back. My co-host, I saw that he was trying to get in as well, but you guys couldn't talk to each other because the switchboard wasn't up for you to be able to talk. So that was the problem. So I apologize. But, so how you been doing? Now, we'll just go from there. We'll just leave all of that.
Great. I am doing well, Red. How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing fine. I'm mad because I haven't been able to do the traveling that I would like to have been doing this last year. But I'm doing fine. I have some things going on, but it's not about me. It's about you. We definitely want to talk to you because I see that you have some new things happening, and we definitely want to get that going. And first of all, we want to properly introduce you. For those who don't know, this is Trice Hickman that we have on the line, and she is here to grace us with her passion and love for writing and all of that, and we're going to listen to her and see what she's coming with tonight. So from that point, we'll let you go ahead and start.
Oh, great. Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you so much for having me on the show. I guess it's been maybe a year or a little over a year since I was last on, and so much, as you know, can happen in a year's time, and it has certainly been an eventful one for me. Lots of changes and lots of, things to come, but I am doing well. I have, a new book that I released back in March, and I have another book that's going to be released in October. I'm writing a book right now and traveling, and so, you know, there's a lot going on, and it's really busy, but, you know, I'm grateful, very grateful and thankful for it all.
Well, that's good, and we're glad because you've been doing a lot of things, and your career has definitely been flying, going forth and doing all kinds of things, so I'm just glad to know who you are and know how humble you are. It seems like the more you do, the more humble you are. I love that because some people, I guess, they handle their fame and fortune in different ways, but you seem to stay the sweet person that you are because some folks, I guess, they feel like being arrogant is the only way to do it, so they do that. But let me bring DV in right now. DV, how you doing?
Okay.
Man, fighting the devil,
yeah,
man.
I know.
That's
yeah, well, we have an issue too. I couldn't even come on with a song, and Trice was already there. She was telling me she was in the queue by herself for the longest, and we just couldn't do anything. So
I wasn't there for the first time.
I had to,
and I was like, okay, let me see.
Well, hi,
DV. Hey, Miss Lady, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic. How are you? Besides fighting the devil, this is what you said.
Like, you know what? Like, I guess this was the weekend for black issues because all I've been hearing is bad, 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 bad.
Oh, no.
Bruh.
Well, you know what? This is a new week and there's plenty of sunshine, so it's going to be great.
It better be.
It's
like not even optional anymore.
That's right. It will be.
You know something? You know something, Trice? I got to say this because DV always gets on me. He says, because I always, you know, I'm so fascinated with you and your voice and all that and how you sound so sexy. He always gets on me, man, don't be talking about her voice all the time, so I'm doing it anyway. And this will be the only time that I say anything because since everything else went jacked up getting this show started today, I mean, it's the first time I had a show with no music just coming in. This is crazy. But anyway, we're gonna work it out. We're going to definitely get it done. So, DV, you had a bad week, so I'm thinking you don't have any questions. A bad weekend, so I don't know if you got any questions or anything you'd like to ask. I'm going to let Trice, first of all, she kind of explained what she's been doing and how things have been great for her career and how she's going forth. She has a new book, and she's going to tell us a little bit about that as well, without giving away, of course. So are you, do you think this is New York Times best-selling material, or what do you think?
I hope it is. We always pray that. Well, the first prayer is that the readers really enjoy the work that we put out, and so that's always my prayer when I'm writing. But I'll tell you a little bit about the book and how I came up with the storyline. The name of the book is called Breaking All My Rules. And and so when you typically hear about breaking rules, well, first of all, let me back up and say that I wrote the book, which is about a relationship between two people who step outside their comfort zone to find love. And I wrote the book because I have so many friends who are looking for love or are in relationships that are unfulfilling. And, you know, I'm always interested in relationships and how they work and just the human condition in general. And so I thought it would be interesting to write a book about two people who are looking for love in a different way. Because when you think about a relationship and you think about breaking your rules for a relationship, most people think when you're breaking a rule that it's as a negative thing, like you have some set guidelines or some set standards that you're going to break or, you know, settle, kind of dumb down for in order to have this relationship. But I wanted to approach it in a very different way, in a way that gives more depth, more life, and more energy to a relationship. One of a character in one of my other novels, she says a line that's so powerful that I think resonates with this novel as well. She says, "People don't change what they want; they change where they get it from."
Interesting.
I think that's very true because it's especially true for these two characters in Breaking All My Rules, Erica Stanford and Jerome Kimbrough. They both want love. They both want commitment, monogamy, you know, honesty, trust, respect. They want love in their relationship. But what they do is they change where they look for it. They change where they get it from. Erica is, she's born into a family of wealth. She's established, she's educated, she owns her own upscale bath and body boutique in an affluent neighborhood in Georgetown, a section of Washington, D.C. And one day while she's at jury duty, she meets this man who just, you know, kind of takes her breath away. And when she gets to know him, he is, you know, a blue-collar brother who comes from the streets. He's had a rough life, but he is working on improving himself in every single way, including the way he goes about relationships. And he works for the city sanitation department. So you have these two people who are from different worlds, but they want the same thing. So then how do they get there? And how, you know, the struggles that they go through along the way. So the book addresses a lot of issues about, you know, our social strata that we look at when, you know, dealing with relationships, as well as, you know, just the differences between men and women and how we view things. So I think it's an interesting read, and I hope that I've gotten a lot of good feedback from readers, and I hope that once people finish reading the book, if they are looking for a relationship, that they'll challenge themselves to step outside their comfort zone and try something new.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you did that because, you know, a lot of this actually is something that has been addressed in the last 4 to 6 months, has really been coming up about people and what they decide to choose when they choose someone, and looking at material things and how those things are used as reasons to not talk to someone instead of finding out what the person is about. you know, people are even going to the point where they're going and checking people's credit and all kinds of stuff before they decide they want to get with a person. Just because you got good credit, you might be have a six-figure salary, you might have a nice car, a nice home, nice clothes, doesn't mean you're going to treat somebody with respect and honor. You know, you can be just the biggest asshole there is, you know, doing that. And most of the people that have money are like that. I ain't going to say everyone, but a lot of people who have those things are kind of like that. So just being real with it. But, you know,
I just think,
go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, finish your, I'm sorry.
No, what I was going to say was, you know, I just think that it's interesting that you chose that subject because it really is a big thing, especially within the African-American community, even though I don't think your characters are just African-American or whatever. But the thing is it's an issue with people. People are looking at people for what they got or what they think they need or what they think they want out of someone in a relationship, and they're looking at all the wrong things. And those
right.
things are material and all of that. They don't want to suffer or whatever they think it is. But, I mean, you can have all those things and still not have what you're looking for as far as love. So I think that that's a great subject matter that you have for that, a premise for the story, and I think it will do well because it's a subject that is real, that people are actually going through today. And, you know, just because somebody works for the sanitation company, does that they're or they came up in a bad way that they're not worthy to be with somebody who has it because... And it kind of reminds me of Claudine. I'm thinking about the movie Claudine, for those who are old as me who know about this movie, because it was kind of like that to a point with a sanitation worker and all that, but it wasn't complete, you know, so. Go ahead, D.B.
No, like, you know, I kind of like hearing stories about this because in real life, women are ostracized and picked on whenever they get somebody who's considered out of their tax bracket, you know, especially black women. It's like, you know, it doesn't matter that you found somebody that you enjoy. All that matters is what is he bringing to the table, you know, and there's a big stigma that tends to surround that. And I think that, you know, people need to get that out of their head that, you know, if you're happy, you're happy. Can't nobody determine your happiness for you. And if you allow them to do it, it speaks volumes of the type of person you are. You know, so I like hearing stories because, you know, if a black man gets a woman who you know, is not necessarily from the top strata, you know, everything's fine. You know, no big deal. But, you know, let it be reversed and all of a sudden, you know, it's a stigma.
Yeah. You know, and something that both of you said really resonates for me, Red, when you were talking about you know, money and how it changes people or how people act with money. My father has this saying, he always says, you never know someone until you deal with them in a money situation. And I believe wholeheartedly. You know,
that
but
is very
money,
true.
You know, money is important in terms of, you know, having a certain lifestyle if that's what you're into. But the essence of life, and I think one of our purposes in life, everyone's purpose is to, you know, live the best life you can and to be happy. And something that DV said about at the end of the day, it's about happiness. You can have all the money in the world and you can be miserable. It all depends on how someone makes you feel. And you can't put a price tag on how you feel, you know, that getting a good feeling from someone, being genuinely loved and cared for by someone, because money can come and go. You can lose money, you can make money, but love, if you have someone who's there who has your back when the chips are down, when you don't have anything, you'll feel like you have $1 million. And that's not a cliche. That is absolutely true.
Yeah. And I just want to say that, you know, a lot of times people may start out with nothing and they're together and they just love each other to the end. And then as soon as money starts coming into play and a lot of it comes in, depending on how much it comes in, or if it comes in slowly or all at once, all of a sudden you win the lottery or you get this deal where you come into a lot of money, it can definitely make a difference in the relationship if they're not rooted and grounded together in foundation with what they had. Because I've seen a lot of people who had nothing and then all of a sudden they got something and now they're not together because money got in the way. I mean, we can use what's the BET guy, Johnson? What's his name? The guy that used
Bob
to have
Johnson.
BET.
Bob
so,
Johnson.
Well, you know, his situation was kind of like that, where he ended up selling BET eventually for $2 billion. And because his woman, his wife at the time, when they got divorced, she became an instant billionaire because they had to split the company. You know, they split the, mm-hmm. the what he earned off of the company. So she became a billionaire. Not saying that she didn't earn it or anything like that. But the point is I'm sure there was a lot of things that was involved in that for their, you know, that could have broke them up. But I'm sure money was probably some of the instance there or whatever. But anyway, she ended up marrying the judge that divorced them. So it was just kind
yeah.
of funny how that went. But,
well,
you know,
they had known each other, I think, even before then, I think. But
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
an interesting situation. But, you know, another aspect of it, too, that we, you know, fail to address sometimes, and it can become a problem, and it's an issue that I address in the book, is when insecurity sets in because one person is not from the same background as the other person. And it can happen on both sides. Sometimes people think that it's always the person who has maybe the lesser education or the lesser level of job, but it can also be the reverse, the other person feeling awkward and not fitting in, and that's what these two characters feel for Jerome. You know, Jerome is, I love this brother, Jerome. He is, he's a hardworking brother. He's made some mistakes, but he is so determined to do the right thing and, you know, help to co-parent his young son, his teenage son, with the boy's mother. And he is, but he has a side of him that feels, you know, kind of intimidated by Erica's success and the fact that all of the men in her past that she dated had these Ivy League degrees and were well-heeled and had these prestigious jobs and, you know, owned, you know, real estate and so forth. And he had to come to grips with that within the story. But it was also, you know, incumbent upon her to help him to do that, because I think when you're in a relationship with someone, you can't just put everything on them. You have to be accountable for that person, and that person has to be accountable for you, too, if you're going to be in it together.
Oh, yeah.
So let me ask you this real quick. The thing that I see with this, and I think this happens to a lot of men, I'm not saying every man feels this way, but a lot of men have issues with women who make more money than them. And
yeah.
because I think sometimes some women, in some of the situations, not all, know that they do, and they use that as a crush against the man to keep him in a certain situation or keep him in a certain, as they say, control of him. Is that?
Yeah.
Do you have any of that kind of action going on in this? Or I know we may,
no.
if you say you want us to wait and see, say that. But I'm just saying, you know.
No, not at all. But you know, that's a good point, Red. And I think when a woman or a man does that in a relationship, they don't need to be in that relationship. If you're with someone and you're trying to hold something over their head, or you are constantly bringing something up in their face about some kind of shortcoming, if it's that much to you, then you don't need to be in that relationship with that person.
Right.
Because, you know, a healthy relationship is about complementing each other. No matter what station you're in, you have to meet with that person where they are. And you have to complement that person. There's nothing better than being in a relationship with someone who makes you feel good about being who you are.
We talk about a perfect world here, right?
What?
Okay, we must be talking about a perfect world, because every person that I know, like, I mean, in stories, everything wraps up like a pretty bow. In reality, people use those little things, the little advantages that they have whenever they're mad over that other person. It doesn't matter if it's education, wealth, who takes care of the kids better. It doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, and they do it. And sometimes they regret it, you know, but
well,
man,
you know,
people get to it.
That's a good point, because it does happen in this novel. But again, like I said, they have to work through it. When they
right.
get mad, there are instances in the storyline where, you know, Jerome yells at her, she yells at him, and they say hurtful things that are actually true, you know. But then you have to have a level of emotional maturity if you set out to be in this kind of relationship, because you know what you've got going in.
Right. Oh, yeah. Being in a relationship where one person makes significantly more than the other is no different, even statistically, than an interracial relationship. Because even though you're dealing with different hurdles, they're still monumental hurdles, and traditionally it's an outside factor that influences your decisions. So it's what people are whispering in your ear that kind of makes you resent that other person that you're with, not necessarily the person you're with that you resent. So,
yeah.
You know, it makes for, you know, those stories like that make for interesting tales.
Yeah,
I think it is interesting.
What you have to overcome.
Right. And I just want to let everybody know that are listening, you know, the number is 347-215-8539. It's Word 60 Radio. And we apologize for the way we came in today, but we got Trice Hickman here, who is telling us about her new book, and we're going to be continuing to discuss with her. As long as she likes to be here on the show, we're going to do that. And I also want to let everybody know that the chat room is open as well. So if you have the link, which is out there on the Word Sexy group, and it's also on my webpage, Facebook page, you can get that link and call in or use that to do your questions. Before we go further, though, Trice, I see a number here. I'm going to see if this person has a question for you. It's also an area code 202 number, and we're going to see if they have a question. It starts with 752. State your name and where you're calling from, somewhere on the East Coast. If you have a question, if you don't, please don't hang up, because I know sometimes I scare people with that. But state your name and where you're calling from. Okay, maybe they don't have a question. All right, but we're going to keep going, because we have Ms. Trice Hickman, who is always an honor to have on the show. We you know, just like when you come on, that you just be yourself, and I always make it this way, so you can be you. That's why I don't never give out questions
Thank
in the beginning.
You.
So you want to be yourself. But getting back to what we were talking about, I think it's very interesting. Now, what is the name of this book again?
It's called Breaking All My Rules.
Okay. And I'm very interested. I see this as being a movie because, and I know a lot of people say that, you know, they want their books to be movies, but really I really see this being a movie because it needs to be told in reality. Just like DV said, you know, how people in a perfect world, things work some type of way. But no matter who the person, whether it's the male or the female, somebody will come in and say, well, I'm making this and I'm doing that. I'm getting tired of not being able to do this. You know, it happens. You know, I'm getting tired of me paying the bills all the time, or me paying for dinner. When are you going to do it? You know, or whatever. You know, those kind of things, I'm sure, are probably may come up in this book or may not, or some types of situations like that may come in. But I want to know if there's anybody out there that's listening, if you have situations like that, please call in. The number is 347-215-8539, and we want you to kind of talk with us and tell us what you experienced. Now, I'm going to go into my old life when I was married to someone who was making more money than I was at the time, and they did use that as a tool against me in situations. And, you know, I was doing what I could with what I had and working with what I, you know, but they kept on. You can tell in the relationship there were certain things that they would try to do and try to say. And you can even take it as if you're living in their home, you know, they purchased this house, they got it, and you come in to the marriage and you move into their house. That's why I always try to tell people, you know, when you do something like that, I think it's best that you just kind of, you know, if you can, get something that's yours together. Start out with something that's yours together with that person, because in most cases, I'm not going to say all, in most cases, if you move in with someone, they're going to, somewhere down the line, they're going to let you know that's theirs. You know, that they did this, and it's just going to, it's just a fact of life. It's going to happen. So what do you say to that?
Wow.
I mean, because we're talking reality here. This is truth. People do stuff like that. They will sit back, and I wonder if you hit some of those things in your book, but if not, I mean, we can talk about that, because in the second segment, we're going to talk about something I saw last night on TV, which was Dark Scan. We're going to get on that one. I really want to talk about this.
Oh,
anyway, go ahead.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about that. But, can you give me your opinion on that?
Well, you know, In the book, the characters don't get to the point where they are moving in yet. You know, they are trying to find their way through this relationship or into this relationship and navigate the waters. But certainly insecurities do come up on both their parts that they have to address. She has to address her insecurity about not quite fitting into his world and about how to understand him, you know, with the situations that occur. I don't want to give away too much in the
book.
Don't
tell the plot.
Because we're talking in general right now, so.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that to answer your question in general, as I said before, you do have to have a level of emotional maturity and intelligence when you're entering into a relationship, and not everybody is equipped with that. But whenever you're in a relationship and you try to make another person feel bad because of who they are, then there's something wrong there. You don't need to be in that relationship, or perhaps you have to look at yourself. Because what I've noticed is that people who constantly try to tear other people down, it's because they're trying to build themselves up in some way.
That is true.
You know,
I agree with you there.
So I think there has to be some self-examination and reflection on who you are. And what led you to, if this relationship was so substandard, what led you to it in the first place?
Exactly. And, you know, my thing is, and I'm glad you hit something that is very important with that. And when you said that people are trying to put themselves up by building you, by hitting you down and building themselves up. My thing is that is very true. They probably came up a certain way, even if they might have been in poverty at one point. And then they got into a point where they were successful and got wealthy. And or they have some other things that's going on in their life that they're trying to cover up with the wealth, so they want to make you look bad so they don't look bad, you know.
Right.
Just because they have money doesn't mean they're educated. They might be going out with educated people, but that doesn't mean whatever. Or they might be educated and don't have any money. I mean, it's a lot of situations that's there that some people will try to hide and try to cover or keep in the closet because they don't want, you know, everybody to know what's going on, because all they want them to see is the glitter that's outside. And we see that with celebrities. We see that with people that have money, and not only people of color, but the people with money and all of that's going on. And that's why you see a lot of times with people with fame, when they get rich, basketball players, football, whatever, actresses, whatever on TV, actors, they get into these big things because the spotlight is on them now. So they were already doing these kind of things before. But because they have money, now people are interested to see what they're doing, so they're following them to see them make the mistakes. So you're right. I agree with you that if they're trying to tear you down and say, I'm better than you, then why are they in the relationship? And second, if they have to do that to you, then what are they hiding? You know, that right there should be a cue to you that, you know, you need to try to get away from that before love gets in too deep.
Well, you know, like, I think the reason why people typically follow celebrities and wait for them to fail is because their lives are typically in shambles as it is. There's nothing people like to see more than their own failures is other people's failures. You know, and that's just how it is. Is if you're failing or if you're doing bad or if you just don't have the things that they have, you don't want other people to have them either. So I think people really wait for people to crash. It doesn't matter if you're in a relationship. It doesn't matter if you know, you just won the lottery. People can't wait to see you fail so that they can tell you how much better they were or how much better you had it when you didn't have anything.
It's not always money either. A lot of times it could be that they don't like because you're in a relationship that's doing better than what theirs is. So they want to tear yours down. He ain't right. Why are you with him? He ain't got no money. He can't do nothing for you. Or she's messed up. She used to be this. She used to be that. And they want to tear it down because theirs didn't make it. So they want you to be in the pity party with them.
Oh, yeah. Like my psych professor, years ago when I was in college, he said one thing that always resonated with me. He said, if you ever want to see the true character of a person, give one of them money or power. You know what I'm saying? And it doesn't matter, you know, in a relationship, it doesn't matter which one you give it to. You want to see the true character of those two people, give one of them one of these things and watch what happens.
Right.
You know, so, and usually whenever you're dealing with politicians or you're dealing with celebrities, they have, you know what I'm saying, all of a sudden all this pressure, or whether it's created by them or created by the outside, is put on their shoulders as to what they have to do, and most of them crack. They take drugs. Mm-hmm. They do alcohol, you know, and even in relationships, you know, if one of them has more education or more money or more of something than the other, you know, more often than not, one of them is going to crack because one's going to feel like you got too much pressure. I need to make all this money. But the other one say, look, you're leaving me out in the cold because you're doing all these things, but you're doing them on your own. You're not doing it as a family unit. So, I mean, that's why I love those stories, because there are so many different things that you can do with them, and they hit so close to home.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting as I'm listening to our conversation, and you know, it's very real that a lot of people want to see other people fail. And when I think about that, I think of, you know, just how sad that really is. When I first came into the publishing world, you know, I had heard about how, you know, authors were against each other and backbiting and all of this kind of stuff. And, you know, I heard it, but I didn't really entertain it, because I came in, and I've always had this, you know, a very different kind of outlook on things. For me, I'm very happy to see other people succeeding, you know. And when my girlfriend or a relative or whomever has something good happen to them, I'm happy, and I want to celebrate that with them. And I look at the book industry is the same way. If one author becomes a success and a reader reads their book and they say, wow, this book is really great, it spurred my interest in reading, then that means that reader is going to go and pick up somebody else's book, and that next book might be yours. So once one person succeeds, we all succeed. You know, and I think,
well, I'm glad
you
feel that way, because it's not the truth.
Well, it's definitely that
well,
way,
no,
though. No, no.
I hate to say it.
Though.
I hate to say it.
It's the truth.
But...
So don't say that, Rick.
No, because you're a different person, and I'm not just saying this. When I say the compliments I give you, it's not because... just to be saying something. I mean, you are this genuine person that we're hearing, and I wish people knew you, you know, like I had the time to meet with you and know who you are. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I haven't been around you the whole time. I know that everybody has sides of them, but you never, in the public eye, show any negativism, which lets me believe that this is who you are. So my thing is you never dog anybody. So I believe that to be true. But I have seen other authors out there who actually do without, you know, bad mouth of the authors or whatever, and being faces and all kinds of stuff. And it's terrible that it's that way.
Yeah.
But it's a cutthroat business, just like the music business is the same way and all of that. And now, because it's different, you know, it's so many ways to get published now. It's not the old mainstream way anymore. So a lot of people are condemning folks for the way they came in and all kinds of stuff. You know, it's just finding all kinds of ways to be against someone. When it's, everybody can read everybody's book. I mean, they're not going to just, well, you want to just read one book and that's it? I mean, there's, you want them to read more. You want them to read. So we got to. It's our job to provide things for people to read. But you're right. I mean, you don't treat people negative. What I've seen of you and what I know of you, you are genuine in what you're saying about how you treat people. But I have seen some authors who have been around for a while, and I'm not saying any names, but they have done some things and they have said stuff. And they will turn around and talk about one and do the other and be in their face and all kinds of stuff. But that's just people. We'll just leave it at that.
And you're right.
But,
I agree with you, and that's why it's so important that if people could just change the way they look at themselves, you know, not other people, but at themselves. Like, why are you not happy for that person? But see, that forces you to examine, you know, why you're not happy with you. And then you would have to then do the work to change that and make yourself a better person. Because, like I said before, when a reader finds joy in a book and they want to go out and read another book, that helps all of us in the writing community because it might be your book that they pick up next, or TV's
that's
book
right.
they pick up next in my book, you know?
You know, I have a thing. Oh, go ahead, Rick.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Sid.
No, like, I have this saying that, and I tell people, I say, I don't judge myself by my successes, but I judge myself by the overcoming of my failures. There are a lot of people who judge themselves based on other people's failures, and that's what they do. They see themselves in a, only as a positive light because other people are failing, and it hurts me that they see the, you know, see things like this, but it's the nature of the beast that, you know, it may not necessarily be they want you to fail, but they like seeing you fail so that they have some sort of self-worth. Because if there are 10 people failing and 2 people succeeding, they're happy that the 10 failed because now they can see themselves as a success.
Right. And you're right on that. I mean, that's been going on since Bible days. I mean, with the Pharisees going around telling everybody that they were, you know, we're this and that, and how can he be? Because he didn't come from us, and, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's been going on forever. But there are some authors, and I use authors because we're authors. So there are some authors that feel like they're not successful unless they are mainstream, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. And then I have seen some that feel that they're not successful unless they're hanging around certain mainstream authors and have them as friends. So they feel like, okay, well, we're friends. I'm hanging with this person. So now I can be known and I can, you know, I'm successful because I have this person as a friend. But that is their definition of what success is, you know. So and they treat people accordingly on how they think. And so if you're not friends with that person, that means you're not a great author or
you're
whatever,
not part of the
you
group,
know, because
yeah.
of that. You're not part of the clan or the clique or whatever you want to call it. But there's a lot of people that feel that way out there that's out there. And it's a shame, but it's a reality. It's a reality that we have to face.
Yeah, it's a shame, and it's a lack of humanity. I mean, because when you look at humanity at its basic core, it's man's love for man. And I know it sounds kind of pie in the sky. You have to love your fellow man, but it's so true. You're laughing at me, but it's so.
No,
it's
I'm not
true.
Laughing at you. We laugh because we know that you. I know that you really believe this.
And
it's not laughing at you. We're not laughing at you. We know that this is. Which if we had it that way, we had 15 choices right here. We would be great. I'd be happy. But my thing is it's so many authors out there that will act kind of like what you're saying, but then turn around and be doing something else behind. You know, you can't control that. But the thing is
right,
it's out
right.
there. So it's out there and. As long as you know that you're doing what's right and treating people correctly, you're going to get the blessings that you deserve. But there's
That's
some people
right.
out there, and then you look at it, they're getting blessed, and you know they're dogging people. Why is that? And you'd be feeling like, wow, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. Why come I can't get, you know, these movie deals or whatever?
But
or,
you know what?
You
never know what that person is going through, though. People
That's
have
true.
So
you
many
don't.
Faces, and people have so many sides. If a person is that duplicitous to act that way, the fame and the seeming fortune that you see may all be a big facade as well. It may be,
yep.
you know, they may be having all kinds of drama going on when they walk into their home and they close their door.
And that's very true. But still, that don't mean come out and act like an asshole when you're outside
That's
of your
right.
home. but it happens. That's what they do. You know, and they act like their nose is up in the air, and how did you get a book written? You know, and, you know,
right.
it's a great accomplishment to have one book.
The funny thing is, if we wrote a book about some of the things that we have seen or encountered, readers would probably say, oh, this is unbelievable. This is unrealistic.
Yeah.
This is so contrite. You know,
they
it's
wouldn't believe
really
right.
true.
Right, yeah.
But,
but
you know
what's true? I mean, go ahead, Dave.
No, like, you know, listening to you, Trice, you know, you are altruism embodied, you know, but... And we have a long way till we get to your point. And the only reason why is simply because, you know, even though, like me, I'm all about specifics, you know, technical, the whole thing. If I don't care what you do, just as long as you do the best at what you do. You know what I'm saying? And I will, I'm hard on people who I think are in it for the wrong reasons. You know,
right,
and
right,
it doesn't
right.
matter what it doesn't matter what it is. I don't care if you're going to get a degree because you think it'll, you know, get you the most money at the end, or I don't care if you're writing a book because, you know, It's the easiest thing. You really can't do nothing else, and it's really the easiest thing if you do. I don't care. You know, if your heart is in it and you are putting your best in it, I will do everything I can to support you and root for you. But if you putting out something just because, and you're half-assing, you half doing it because, hey, you know, the author before you did it, I have no respect for you, and that's just how I am.
Ill intentions. Yeah. You're exactly right.
And you know,
I always quote characters from my book. In the sixth book that I'm writing right now called Looking for Trouble, there's a character who says, she has this line that I really love. She says, you can never go wrong doing right. And what you just said reminds me of that, because when you go into something for the right reason, no wrong can come. I mean, you might not get the results that you want, but things will work out the way they should.
Right.
You can never
right.
go wrong doing right. When you set forth with good intentions and you do things the right way, you're going to have the results that are supposed, you know, life is going to give you what it needs to give you.
Well, I just hope that you stay the way you are no matter what. Because, I mean, even if, and I know every day is not a good day. You're going to have bad days because you're human. But
right.
you never show that to nobody that I've seen since I've been around you. I have not seen you do anything. And I pray that you, and I know you won't because this is you, that you don't let yourself get caught up in the mix where something comes out. And if it does, you're human. But the thing is don't let that be a norm, because there are some people that say it's just norm. That's just their norm. And you know, there's one, I want to say her name so bad, but I'm not.
Just give us initials. Give us initials.
TM, she just can't help herself. She just can't help herself.
Who?
And Terry McMillan, she just can't help herself. I'll go ahead and say it. Anyway, you know, she's just one of those type of people that just, you know, she's upset because she felt like she came into the game hard. And back then it was coming into writing and being an African-American or a person of color and a woman coming into writing books and then getting people to, you know, in the mainstream industry, getting it out there, and then, you know, trying to make it better than everybody else, because you have to be better, I'm sure, than your white counterparts, so that people can recognize you. And then they have a couple of movies made out of your books, and then here comes Joe Smucatelli, who don't have nothing. He didn't wrote a book, or she didn't wrote a book, published it herself, and it's out there now, and everybody's buying it and picking it up. You feel like, you know, how did they get a chance to do this? And I didn't get to do it like that. I couldn't get picked up that way, or I couldn't get noticed if I did that. You know, even you started out with self-publishing, and then you got into the mainstream. So, I mean, it's just, you know, you have your own opinion of how you feel that is. So, I mean, she may feel that way, but, I mean, this is technology has taken its toll and its place in making it easier to do certain things now that you didn't do back then. Mm-hmm. If I was her, I would make myself say, well, at least I paved the way for others to be able to come. That's like Vivi said, that is doing it for the right reasons or doing it and try to make it the best that they can. Because sometimes mm-hmm. you just can't get the mainstream. You can't. You know, that's why they have indie music artists and stuff like that that come out.
Mm-hmm.
You put enough on YouTube and get enough hits, you'll get that. But the thing is mm-hmm. just because somebody came that way doesn't mean that they're not worthy. Not all the mm-hmm. time.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's
like,
all I'm saying.
You know, I hate to agree with some of her argument, but if you look at a lot of books that are out now, they can mm-hmm. use some heavy editing. They can use some.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying every book.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I'm not saying everybody that comes out that way. I'm not saying everybody that comes out self-publishing is worthy. I'm saying that some are.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like people that come out in the mainstream. There's mistakes in their books as well, and they have some crap, but they still out there.
But
so it just depends, you know.
Whenever you're a minority, and this is just true, no matter where on planet Earth you stay. Whenever you are a minority, everybody looks at you by the worst things that people do. If somebody gets shot in Los Angeles in a drive-by, what do they say? You know, black people like that. They like killing each other. You know, if they catch Hispanic people in a car, six in a car, and they all legal, but they arrest them anyway, what do they say? Well, you know, they're legal. People tend to judge you by the worst common denominator. So the thing is, when you give them ammunition to do it, like, I'm not saying it's a perfect world, but when you give them ammunition to do it, they're going to do it. And now it's not even like they got a few bullets. Now they got chain guns.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you just never know someone's motivation or, you know, the reason why some people do some of the things that they do. In regard to what you were saying about Miss McMillan, you know, Terry really paved the way in terms of introducing African American characters in literature. You know,
yes, I give her props.
That was tangible for most of us because, you know, you have,
right,
of course, the literary giants that we all know from Zora Neale Hurston to Alice Walker to Toni Morrison. But Terry's brand of contemporary fiction made it so attainable, so real for many of us. And I think, I don't know what all of her opinions are on it, but I know that she takes writing very seriously. She takes the industry very seriously, and she's very passionate about, you know, just the whole experience of writing and what we put forth. And something that DV was saying, I know a lot of authors, both independent authors and traditionally published authors, are both talking about, you know, the quality of writing that we have now and the types of stories that we're writing and the types of things that, you know, we will accept as a people just really,
right,
continues to shock me every day. As a people, we often tolerate and even encourage substandard behavior.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me go on the record saying that I'm not dogging Miss McMillan.
I'm
not taking anything from her.
You get with a subpoena tomorrow.
Because, no, I just want to be able to, I want people to understand that's listening. I am not dogging Terry McMillan. I don't know her. I'm just saying a lot of the stuff that she has done, and yes, you're right, she has paved lots of ways and for a lot of us to be able to write today. That I'm not taking from her. But I guess she has a right to be upset. I'll say it like that because there is a lot of stuff that's being put out. And she used the example of the Ubonics that's in a lot of the urban fiction books. Okay, it's like, you know, a lot of those books don't have to be edited for some reason because you're writing something that's street and it's hood. What's the right way of, you know, I mean, unless you're looking for the right way to say what the meaning is, the spelling is how are you going to judge that? You know what I'm saying? So I understand where she's coming from with that. But also, You have to understand that is a genre that is out there now that people are really buying in. Like she can continue to do it in her area, what she's doing, I applaud her. You know, she did open it up. You know, even with Zane, with the stuff that she does and everybody else that's out there that's doing things, they have opened up ways for a lot of African-Americans to be seen in different lights. So, you know, it's out there. The urban fiction is out there, the whatever, but
I think it's wonderful because we have such a variety to choose from now. I remember growing up in my small town in eastern North Carolina where there weren't any black books that you could find in bookstores or libraries. And there were, you know, we just didn't have the number of African-American authors that we do now. And so even in small towns now, even though there are black authors plentiful, you know, they still don't have the same access to as many. But I think, you know, it's just a wonderful thing that we have so many different authors out here who are putting their stories out there. But I will say this, it does give me pause when I see just any and everything being put out for the sake of a dollar, you know.
Right.
Or, you know, I think that this is going to be a quick hustle for me. And anyone who is in this business knows that creating a work of art is not a hustle. And selling it is a tremendous challenge. You know, getting an audience, building them, earning their respect as a writer, you know, with the integrity of your pen and what you do, that's not a hustle. That is a job. That's an art form.
Right.
That's your passion.
Absolutely.
Your life, you know. And so But, you know, we're at a really great time in our industry, and it's also a really scary time because there's so much change. And
Right. Navigating
that change and trying to figure out, you know, how to position yourself when there are, it seems like, you know, a thousand new authors springing up every single day.
That's true.
Like we say all the time on this show, everyone has a story to tell, but they shouldn't always be the one telling it, you know. You know, and it's just, you know, that's just kind of
that's
how
true.
It is. You should get somebody who knows how to tell your story, you know, or find somebody who can help you better tell your story.
And you know, everybody, and you get this too, Trice, I know all the time. People come to you and they say they want to write a book, and you ask them, just be nice to them, well, what would you like to write about? And the first thing come out of their mouth is, I want to write about my life. And then you say, well, what's so good about your life that you want to, you know, how, what are you going to tell me about you? Well, I've been through a whole bunch of things. Blah, blah, blah. Well, you, that's great. But what's so good about your life that I need to read about it, that you're going to give me? You got to be able to give me something that makes it different from what everybody else is going through.
Right.
You know, I mean, and like you said, there's a lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of authors. And a lot of authors putting this stuff out for 99 cents because they think all this work they've done was only worth 99 cents. And, you know, sometimes doing, I'm guilty of it myself sometimes, you know, but I do it for holidays. Like Christmas time, I might have my Kindle books go for 99 cents. But I'm not going to put a book out that I worked hard on and it took me months to write and to get it edited and to get it right and to get it to where it's presentable, to the best way of being presentable, to put out so that I can sell it for 99 cents. What am I doing? You know, to me, all that work, are you telling me that it's not worth more than 99 cents? But you got a lot of people doing that. And it's becoming a trend now where everybody is just, they think that a 99 cent book is you know, I don't get it.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. Like I was saying before, the landscape is just the value of literature and how we've looked at positioning it in it. From a business standpoint, has changed so dramatically because of technology. It's a wonderful thing, and I think it's opened up so many avenues for people to have their voices heard. But, you know, I do worry about what is going to actually happen to the platform of literature as a result of, you know, the price points that we're seeing. When you look at artists, who musical artists who are releasing their CD or their album, you know, and on iTunes, you can buy the cumulative work for a set price, but the individual songs are going to be $1.29 or 99 cents or whatever that you download.
Right.
They are not going to give away their body of work. For a dollar, for less than a dollar. They're just not going to do it. But we do it in the literary world, and somehow, you know, and don't get me wrong, I'm not, like you said, Red, you know, everybody has their own way of doing things. If you feel that you're, you know, you want to put your book out there for 99 cents, then as an entrepreneur, as the owner of that work, that is your right. You know, I'm not knocking anybody's decision to do that, but what I am saying is that the cumulative effect that it has, sometimes we can actually devalue the quality of something or either change the whole mindset of what the value of a product is.
Mm-hmm. And that is well said
and with a lot of education and background to go with that. I agree, definitely. What I want to do now is, because we could talk about this the whole 2 hours now, I really want to do that. So what I want to do is I want to give you time right now to go ahead and tell people how they can get your book, anything that you have coming up as far as your book signings and stuff like that. And then we're going to go into maybe a quick intermission. And then I would like to get into what I saw last night, what I think is very, very dear to me, as well as should be to everyone else, is racism within our race, with the show I saw last night called Dark Sisters. I thought that show was dramatic, and you know, Oprah always brings the subjects to us. So I just want to kind of talk about how do we feel about relationships and people with the relationship. Well, not even relationships, but I mean, it does go into relationships, but.
Well, I'm
going
to hang on the line
black,
to talk about that,
right,
too.
right, because, you know, black people in itself, there's racism within our race, so we're going to discuss that. But go ahead and tell people how they can get your book and everything.
Well, thank you for allowing me to tell everybody about my books and my upcoming events. My novel, Breaking All My Rules, is available right now wherever books are sold. You can download it on any kind of e-reading platform. You can go to your local library and you can go to your local bookstore, and if it's not on the shelf there, you can order it. And it typically takes about 2 days for the book to come in. But I would love for anyone who's interested in reading about people who are willing to take a chance on love and step outside their comfort zone to find it, I encourage you to read Breaking All My Rules. And once you read it, let me know what you think about the book. My website is Trice Hickman, my first and last name, TriceHickman, TriceHickman.com. My upcoming event, after I do this show on July 2nd at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I have another blog talk show that I'm doing. It's going to be a blog talk book club discussion on the Scribe Spot blog talk show. So you can find details. Yeah. I'm going to do a live book discussion for Breaking All My Rules, talking about the characters, talking about the story, talking about the motivations behind what certain characters did in certain scenes, and more about relationships. Yeah, I'm very excited about it because I love to talk to readers to see, you know, what their view is and their experiences with the book. So I welcome people to go to my Facebook page and my website and check that out. And I'm going to be doing another blog talk show on July the 11th. I don't have the information for that, but that'll be on my website soon. I'll also be doing a keynote speaker for an aspiring writers workshop called the Right Now Aspiring Authors Workshop in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, on July the 27th. And at that conference, I'll be talking about just how I got my literary start and giving a mini workshop with tips for authors who, if you are interested in writing a book, if you're interested in publishing a book, or if you have published a book and you just, you know, it's languishing and you just don't know how to get it, you know, picked up or started, I'm going to be giving tips and information at that workshop. So all of these, and then I'll be at the National Book Club Conference after that, the weekend after that, which is August 1st through the 3rd. I have about 8 other events that are coming up in September and October as well, and I would name them all, but it would just be too long. So you can go to my website at TriceHickman.com and check it out. And I hope I can see and meet with a lot of you then.
All right. Well, we're always glad to have you. And please stick around because this subject, I definitely have questions for you and DV and everyone that has experienced this. Because if you are African-American, I'm sure you have in growing up, and I can give I don't know if I'm older than who. I'm probably older than everybody here. But anyway, I can give you what I went through in my time, and we can all talk about all the things that we're going through as far as this. But I just want to get on that subject of dark skin versus light skin because it's just one of those things that's still going on within us. So we're going to do a quick intermission, and I'm going to play a song that's kind of close to it because, you know, Indy Ari always got this thing going on. So we're going to play her new cut, and then we're going to go right into the subject.
Oh, of India Ree with her new one called Cocoa Butter, right here on Word Sexy Radio. And we're doing it like we always do it every Monday. And we started out like we always do. And we still have Miss Trice Hickman on the show, and we're going to keep it going. And we're going to be talking about dark skin. And what better way to come into it from the segue of India Ree? So we're going to do that as we go forth. And, you know, she was on Oprah as well, talking about that. And somebody tried to accuse her of using a type of, some type of, I guess, lotion or something to lighten herself up. And I know she is not not in such a way that she thinks that she has to be lighter. But, you know, they always got something to say about something. But that show, if you didn't see it, you need to check it, get a chance to watch that about dark-skinned women. Because it talks about women, how they are portrayed in the videos and how they always, rappers use the light-skinned women. And they talk about they with the sisters and they all this and that. I'm not just hitting on rappers, but in all the industry, you know, even in movies, you know, your main characters have to be someone that is a little bit closer to white or whatever that they try to use in the situation. So I just kind of wanted to kind of discuss this because even in our relationships, you find yourself, you find people with, it's usually a light-skinned person with a dark-skinned person. And it's not all the time that you see two dark-skinned people together, or a lot of times you may see two light-skinned people together. And it's always some reason behind that. So we just kind of, I just kind of wanted to open a discussion on that and kind of get your perspective, Vivi and Trice, on how you feel and from the, some of your experiences that you came up on how you feel about that. And we can start with you, Trice.
Well, let me say that I did not see the documentary, but I've heard so much about it. And I have to say this too. I'm probably one of, like, probably 1% of the population in of America that does not have cable because I don't watch a lot of TV.
No, not
all.
You. Really? What? No cable? No, you got too much money, Naga. What are you talking about? That's not true.
Because I don't watch TV. Okay, look, besides Scandal and a couple of shows on PBS, I don't really watch TV.
I
read
saying.
A lot,
I
and I get most of my information through streaming, so I really have no need to, you know, for cable. But so I just wanted to make that clear. I have not seen it, but
I'm
heard. I've heard.
It's okay.
So much, okay. I've heard so much commentary about the show, and I have been looking at clips and reading excerpts and. It's something that I talked about in my first book, Unexpected Interruptions. When that book came out several years ago, I went back to my alma mater, which is an HBCU, Winston-Salem State University, and I met with a group of young women to discuss the book. And one of the issues in the book is the colorism issue that was addressed in Dark Girls and how, as African-Americans, we have this class stratification between light and dark skin, and we all know that that dates back to slavery and the field hands versus the, you know, the house servants and so forth.
I'll say it for you, the house nigga versus the field hand. There you go.
Oh, right.
Field niggas and house niggas. I know we don't want to say the word. And I hope I'm not offending you by saying it, but it's the we're just being real here. We're just being real, and go ahead.
Right. What struck me and what hurt my heart, Red and DD, when I went back and I talked to this group of young women is that this was in, you know, the late 2000s. I think it was 2008, 2009 when I went on campus, and the same color issues that they were dealing with then when I talked with them were the same color issues that were on campus in the 80s when I was a student, and I remember from, you know, the 70s growing up. I'll be 45 in January, and so...
Really?
I'm excited about it.
Wow.
And, you know, aging is a wonderful thing because it means that you're blessed to see, you know, another year and just to be here, so I'm happy about that, but in my time here on this earth, which, you know, I'm not old, but I'm not a young woman either. But I've seen so many shifts and changes in a lot of attitudes about different things in our society. But the one thing that I've seen us continue to struggle with as a community is the color issue. I grew up in the South, as I said, and I love the South. I love being, you know, I always tell people I'm a Southern girl. But there are certain attitudes that are rooted in the South, and not just in the South. I think we find it in communities up north and in the West and Midwest as well, that are just so very backward and detrimental to us as people. And it's the perceived notion that light-skinned is better and darker skin is not. And I can recall when I was talking with these young women, they were saying that if you were on campus and you were a light-skinned girl, it didn't matter whether you were attractive or not. If you were light-skinned, you had boyfriends. But if you were a dark-skinned female on campus, you had to have a great body, a pretty face, a nice attitude. You know, you had to have everything checked off in order to get a boyfriend. And every single girl in the room, a light or a dark, agreed. And it broke my heart to hear those young women talk that way. And it's really sad. Now, it's not that it's a blanket thing with everyone. I'm not saying that every campus is like that, and every, you know, of course, we know we're not monolithic. But the fact that all of these women, and there were about 35, 40 girls in this session.
Well, I'm going to tell you, not trying to cut you off, but I'm going to tell you, you're probably 90%, it's probably 90% across the board, and I'm probably not giving it enough, because it's still going on. It's out here. I mean, even in our media, and like I said, when I was mentioning before, you know, you look at the videos, everything that's just betrayed to us is people that have that look. The long hair, weave, or whatever it may be, the light eyes, the skin, I mean, all of that. Mm-hmm. It's because they're making it seem like that's right, and dark is dirty and nasty and evil, and, you know, even if you look it up in the dictionary, what does they say what black is? They say black is evil and it's negative.
The absence of color.
You know, all of those things, you know. So what you're saying is true still. I mean, even now, you know, I often joke all the time. I say, well, the light-skinned man can't come back, you know. But it's just one of those things that's going on. You know, people look down on sisters and black men as well. And it's a shame that you can go to another country and you are treated like gold. Just like, I'll give you an example. A dark-skinned man could go to Germany, and he will be the king in Germany because those women over there will fight for him and be for that man. The darker, the better. And you know, it just, and even we can go with sizes as well, because in some African nations, you can be a woman that is very big, you know, body-wise, and you're going to, they judge their women by how big they are. That means that they're wealthier because of the size of the woman. So, I mean, within our own race,
or more fertile,
we have this thing. We got this problem with light skin, like you said, the Willie Lynch thing or whatever it is that's still there, instilled in ourselves, and we're still teaching ourselves that if you're light or if you're closer to white or whatever, you're going to get the better job. You know, it's even been proven in that. With jobs, people, they'll hire certain folks, and they'll give them more money based on the color. It happens. So I'm not shocked that you went there back then and you found that this is still going on, but it's still going on today. And there are women who are very beautiful. I love chocolate women anyway, but very beautiful chocolate women that are not getting the same things that these light-skinned women, and nothing against them. I don't want y'all to get the wrong idea. But because they're light-skinned, you know, they're going to get more opportunity. And I think it's wrong, but we have to stop it. It's got to come from us to quit this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean,
it's like, I mean, I'm going to preface what I'm going to say with Spike Lee's School Days. I mean, you guys remember that movie, right?
Right.
Well, yeah, School Days is a perfect
example. You know, and, you know, what Spike Lee did in order to create animosity between the darker skin, you know, people and the lighter skin people, he gave them separate everything. So that they
couldn't fraternize. Jigaboos and wannabes.
Right.
Jigaboos
right.
And wannabes, yes.
You know what I'm saying? But the thing is as people,
we perpetuate that myth that being lighter is better. And I take you for case in point. Now, even though there are a few countries on planet Earth that accept dark-skinned people for what they are, if you go to any country, I don't care if it's South America, I don't care if it's India, the darker you are, the more likely you are not to have a job. In fact, they promote ads showing that, hey, if you use a skin lightener, there's a greater chance for you to have for you to be profitable.
And all of that came out in that documentary.
In fact,
they were saying that
so
there's countries
bad.
That
it's
they're
so
putting
bad.
This stuff in. Yeah.
Right. It's so bad in South America that they don't even have like dark skin Afro, you know, what they call them, Afro Spaniards, I forget what they call them, but they have them living on the outskirts of the city. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, water or power or things going out, they're the first ones to get the shaft. The thing is, in America, we tend to do the same thing. And when we're not doing it, society is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we will go to school and make fun of the dark-skinned girls, call them the worst names, African booty scratcher, you know, tar baby. We will go ahead and do exactly what the KKK did to our own people so that when they grow up, the reason why they don't gravitate towards dark-skinned men or dark-skinned men don't gravitate towards dark-skinned women is because they don't want their children to have to endure the same things that they endure. And whether it's subconsciously or whether it's totally conscious, you know, these are the things that they do. They shy away from people who have the same skin color as them because they don't want their children to deal with these things. Like, even today, 2013, the end of June, there's a school in Ohio, all right, that won't allow girls to wear natural hair or Afro puffs. So, in other words, what they're saying is as long as your hair is permed or pressed, you're welcome at our school, in our school district. But once you get those braids and those Afro puffs, anything natural, we're not having it. So, you know, if we're not fighting amongst ourselves, they will surely give us a reason to once again fight amongst each other for, you know, what the definition of beauty is supposed to be.
Is this a private or public school?
I think it's a private. You know what? It's the school district that issued it. So, like, I can get you the name of the district. I was reading a link. And I kind of just shook my head at it.
It's really sad. It's so discriminatory and sends such a terrible message. But, you know, it all starts with, you know, how we feel about ourselves. I've been thinking about this issue all last night and today. And I had posted something on my Facebook page about my skin because I have chocolate-colored skin. And so I'm one of those. Oh, thank you. And I'm one of those, you know, dark-skinned girls. And I grew up in the South.
Very beautiful.
And thank you, Red. I appreciate
that. I'm serious, man. I'm telling you. Oh, man. Anyway, yeah, go ahead. I know you're trying to say. You're trying to explain.
But when I was growing up, my father used to always tell me how beautiful my skin was. He would always tell me, you have beautiful black skin. You have the prettiest skin. You're the prettiest little girl. And, you know, when you hear a man tell you that you're beautiful, that is something that little girls, you know, it just does something for your self-esteem. Now, a man shouldn't define the way a woman feels about herself or vice versa, but all too often it does. I mean, because, you know, the reality is women, as a woman, you want men to find you attractive. So
Right. Although
my father told me that I was attractive and that I was pretty, when I went out into the world, I did not get that same message because all throughout high school, I did not go on my first date. This is something I don't share often, but since we're talking about this subject, it's very personal. I did not go out on my first date until I was almost 20.
And, you know, it's crazy because they were talking about that on the show about how it's important for us as that we have sisters, that we should be telling our sisters how beautiful they are before they actually get out there, you know, especially in situations where if they're dark skinned and you know, they may not feel that they're attractive, because I'm telling you, I mean, you remember when they did the test back in the day when I forget what the professor's name was, when he had these dolls and he went around to these different schools and he had these the white dolls and he had the black dolls and he had the kids pick which they thought was acceptable, and they always was picking the white dolls because they felt like that was the only way that they can, you know, that's what they wanted to play with because that's what they thought was right.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing. We still got that going on now, and it's just crazy that that's happening today. It's still going on today, even though people might try to act like it isn't. It is, and we still have this thing about color, and you know, like I said, in our media, it's betrayed all the time, and you know, it's just terrible because you know, and sometimes you try. I even have issues. I'm single. Sometimes I try to date women of color that's really, you know, beautiful chocolate like you. And a lot of times they think you're playing with them. They think you're not serious because of my skin color, you know, because I'm light-skinned, okay? So they think you just want to play with them and use them. A lot of these women think that, just like you were saying earlier, these women that had the curvy bodies and everything and had to have all these things, they were always the women that the men didn't want to be seen with, but they want to have sex with them and do things with them, but don't want to take them home to their mama or have kids with them because they want to have this light-skinned girl to have kids with because they think it's going to make them look better or whatever the case. You know, this is crazy, but it is. But let me bring in, I got another guest that's coming in real quick. Another female is going to help us out. And that's Dreka Armstrong is going to come in, and she's going to talk on her end. So we're going to bring her in as well. So, Dreka, how are you this evening?
I'm doing fine, and yourself?
And we're doing just great. I want you to say hi to Ms. Trice Hickman and to D.B. Hint.
Hi, Trace. Hi, Cece.
Hi,
hey, sweetie.
Dreka, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Doing great.
Yeah, she's up there in, she's up there in the, you're in Jersey, right?
Yes. In fact, I actually met Trace a couple of years ago at J.M. Benjamin's store in Plainfield, New Jersey.
Oh,
okay.
Did we?
That's me.
All right. Now, do you really remember Trice, or are you just saying that?
No.
She's like, oh, okay. All right, no, I'm just, she's so sitting, I love her.
You know, I
I'm just playing.
Look,
I know, y'all hate me, but you know, I'm feeling this. But she says she don't like light-skinned men, but let me tell you something. I am feeling it because women are turning me down all the time. Because of it.
Well, you know,
I love my chocolate sisters, and I can't get them. But then let's go on back into this, what we were talking about. And we're going to get your opinion, but I want to get DV to kind of state his background and where he's coming from with it. And then we'll let you go with it, Dreka. All right?
Like, no, you know what?
We got 30 minutes.
Me,
yeah.
All right, you know what irks me very briefly is that we hold on to this myth that being dark skin is so bad that we won't even let our kids out to play in the sun. Why? Because they get darker. And all of a sudden, like, oh, Lord, my child getting darker. I got to, you know, keep him or her in. You know, and the things, we do this without realizing that we're doing it. You know what I'm saying?
All the time.
And that's what amazes me. It's like, well, I'm not racist, but, you know, I don't want my kids out in the sun because they get darker. And, you know, like, even, you know me, Red, there's nothing I love more than a dark-skinned woman, but it's a preference, you know. And it's not that I dislike light-skinned women.
It's
not that I dislike
light-skinned
women. It's simply what I prefer. Would I go out on a date with somebody who was light? If she was intelligent and we got along, yes. Why would I deny myself an opportunity to be with somebody I get along with? But skin color, it doesn't even enter the equation. I've dated white girls, you know. It's just that more often than not, we don't have the same things in common, you know. So we just ended up being friends and whatnot.
There's nothing against. There's nothing against that. I don't have anything against people who do. It's nothing wrong with that. But for me personally, I can't get past certain things with it. And I guess it's just something within me or how I was brought up. But and I tried to do that. I just can't. I mean, you can't be yourself with them. You just can't. I mean, how can you talk about subjects? How can they talk about subjects? You know, and family members and, you know, I mean, I understand love and all that. Don't get me wrong.
And we're changing. I don't want to get into the interracial thing, but they did discuss that a little bit in the show, that a lot of dark-skinned women, because they can't get the love from the African men, black men, African-American black men, because they're going to all the light-skinned women, that they go to out of their race and marry white men because they don't have to worry about color, because the guy's loving them for them. And a lot of times if you hear it, it's like, well, they don't, it's not that they actually... Well, that's what they kind of said on the show.
I'm going to tell you this. If you're a white man dating a black woman, you done gave up a whole lot. And I'm going to tell you that now.
Of course. That is true. And it's the same thing with us. I think we give up a lot as well, because you're going to go through, I think on both sides of it, you're going to go through a type of, you got to have thick skin, because you're going to go through this thing. You know, I think when you marry out of your race, not only with black or white or whatever, I think if you just marry anybody out of your race, there's going to be a thing that you got to think about. Your kids, do you want them to go through this thing? You raising kids that are interracial. All those kind of things are things you have to think about, because the way society is, it's messed up. It's fucked up. I'm going to say it like that. But it is what it is. So the thing is, those are a lot of things you got to look at, because it's not just you. You got to think about in that case. And it might be a myth, but the examples they showed last night, it made a lot of sense that some of the guys just wasn't thinking about it. It just happened to be with... They fell in love with this black woman. Then you look at it. I even said, man, she fine. What's she doing with him? But then when she wasn't with him, you know, it's not me personally, but then the guy ain't trying to get with her because she's not with you. So, you know, I don't know. Let's get some women to speak on that.
Yeah.
Any one of you. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I mean, what DD said is very true. For some reason, it really digs a core. And some women, when they see a black man with a white woman, but I find it very strange, and which I've seen myself, if that black man is African or Haitian, they could care less. But for some reason, if he's African American and he's with a Caucasian female, some women lose their mind and they want to know, well, why are you going to a white woman like you? And I think, and it's funny that me and my mother was discussing this earlier, that people in the recent generation, we are holding on to slavery and to what the Caucasian people did and to how slavery affected our ancestors 2 and 3 times removed. We're harboring that anger. And because we're harboring that anger, we don't want to see our black man with no white woman, because, like, that's the enemy. We need to let it go. None of us picked cotton.
Mm-hmm.
We need to cut it out.
So what do you think about the examples that they use? Well, there's not enough black men because they're in jail or dead. And then the men, they use the excuse, well, I get tired of coming home and there is nothing enough for you. You're always nagging and you're always on my case. I mean, you know, that's, we're kind of going off of what I really want to talk about. But this is part of it, though, because, you know, I really want to focus more on the dark skin versus light skin problems that we have went through in growing up. Because I remember in my situation being a light skin guy growing up in the 60s and 70s. So I am the oldest here. Coming up during that time frame, it was really rough
age.
Because, well, yeah, age. But the thing is this. They were condemning me because I had, you know, back then was wearing froze, whatever, you know, started out with short hair, and then you started wearing a froze in the 70s because you had hair and all this. And you know, it wasn't that every light-skinned person thought they was better than you, but everybody had that stigma that you were because you looked a certain way. So it's the same thing about, I guess, light skin taken to the dark. You ain't good enough because you're dark. So, you know, and then the stigma, like I said, with the slavery, the house nigga in the house, usually if you light skin, you must be mixed with massa because you in there. And then if you dark as black as coal, you out there in the field. But, you know, I mean, it was not always the light skin was in the house. But, you know, they always use that as analogy. But in my case growing up, I got a lot of, I had to go through a lot of fighting and all that stuff because of me being light. So it's not just you being dark that you get that. Yeah, you get the jigaboo name and all this, and people calling you names and all this stuff, and it's terrible. Oh, you ain't got no hair on your head, blah, blah, blah. You know, you just whatever, nappy head or whatever. But, you know, even the light-skinned people got condemned too.
because it was like, okay, you think you're better than me, so they want to always want to fight me, always want to do something because I came out a certain color or they came out a certain, you know, it was, so it goes both ways. But my thing is this is 2013 and we're still going through this shit. I don't understand it. So it's just amazing.
That's the puzzling and the troubling part of this whole quandary that we find ourselves still in today. And in my book, Unexpected Interruptions, the main character is a product of a very dark-skinned father and a mother who is so fair-skinned that she could pass for white. And this main character turns out to have her father's hue. You know, she's a dark-skinned black woman, and she ends up going through a lot of different things in this book that I was just appalled that, you know, it's still going on now and with those young girls that I was talking to you about on campus. But the thing is this, that I have found with us, we are so hard on each other as a people. And I just don't know why. I have tried to, you can't blame everything. We cannot go back to slavery for every single thing, you know. And I think some of the isms that we have were even predated before we were brought to this country during this transatlantic slave trade. But what I see is that in our society right now, or in some people's mindsets, it's so tough because you're in, on one hand, you're too dark, you know, or you're too light. Where do you fit in? You know, that whole brown paper bag thing. And it's just the craziest thing. Like, in a perfect world, we would appreciate that all hues are beautiful, which they are. I mean, if you look at us as a people, oh, my gosh. You know, you have everything from cafe au lait to coal black. We come in so many varieties. We are so beautiful. And instead of embracing that, we have found a way to make it this antagonistic thing. And I don't know how to change. I mean, the dialogue is good, but we can talk all day about, you know,
But, you know, my thing is, and since you said that, that they also showed in this that there's different countries where everybody's black, you know, like Haiti and stuff like that, where they still have the same issue going on because you got the mixed color people there. Even in Korea, and I this is one that hits home for me because my kids, my first two kids are half Korean. I was married to a Korean woman my first marriage, and there was a girl that was on there that was half Korean, and she had told her experience when she went back to Korea, how she was even, her being darker, I don't know if her father was or her mother was, it had to be the mother that was Korean or whatever, not really. But anyway, I don't know which one was, if she was mixed with black or what, but it must have been because she was on the show. But she was talking about how she, when she went back to Korea, how they looked at her differently. And, you know, the Koreans, they if you've never been to Korea and you go over there, they are really on this thing about you being pure Korean, you know. They definitely don't, you know, they look at the mix and they treat their people that's mixed a little, you know, not really, they treat them bad. I'm just going to be honest, they treat them like shit until they have a kid with somebody that's mixed from a soldier or something like that. Then all of a sudden they want you to come, but they want you to come when nobody sees you, like come in at night, you know, to the house to visit them and when nobody can see you coming in or whatever. We went through all of that when I was married to her and all that stuff. So it was just crazy. But what I wanted to say was a couple of things. Another one was, and I'm not trying to pick on Tyler Perry, so people out there, if you listen, I'm not dogging Tyler Perry. I'm just saying this, the have and the have-nots is a show that he has on right now where there are some things that's going on. And the woman that they have, I love this woman. Her name is Tika Sumter. She is playing the role of this woman who is messing with this white man who is like the head, you know, he's like the head of the house. He's running for governor. But anyway, the thing is they picked the most beautiful chocolate woman to be the hoe in this show. And I don't know if he meant that or she just auditioned for the part and got it. But it's just like she's the most conniving one in the show, and she's chocolate. They didn't pick nobody light-skinned to do that, a Holly Berry look-alike or something like that. They got this dark woman doing it. And I just don't, I'm sorry, I don't agree with that, but that's me personally. you know, they want to show evil or whatever. I don't care. You know, I know everybody likes Tyler Perry and everything. I like him too, but I don't understand why that is. And it may be just me thinking that way. It may not even be. I don't think it was set up that way. So I'm going on record saying it wasn't set up like that. But the thing is it is that. And I would never have seen her pick this part. But is it that bad that you have to, for in this industry, that you have to take a part like that? I mean, I don't know. So, you know, it's just...
Well, you know, you raise a very interesting point, Fred, and about, you know, how the perception of women based on color and attitude is, because I was reading something that basically backed up, you know, the feeling that came up in you when you saw this beautiful woman playing, looking the way she does, playing this particular part. And what I had read, I can't even remember what article it was from what magazine, but they were talking about how within this whole Dark Girls documentary, the point of in television, in movies, when you have roles that you want or and in books as well, roles where you want to show a loud, mouthy, loose, immoral woman or a gold digger or a schemer, she is usually the dark-skinned character. And I found that very interesting. I can't say that I've noticed that in some of the programming or books that I have read, but what I can say is that when I see videos, when I see advertisements for makeup, when I see women in magazines, they typically do not look like me in a variety of ways. Skin color being one of them. Body shape being one of them.
You know what type of women look like dark-skinned women? The women selling chicken. You know that Popeye's.
Yes.
Chicken lady, I want to choke
I'm still trying to figure out how does she become Popeye's chicken.
But that's my point. The thing is, they would never put a light skinned person to sell Popeye's chicken. You know, at least not be the spokesperson. But as soon as they got themselves the brown skinned woman, and she's like, "I love me some chicken, y'all come get it."
Oh yeah,
man, I want to reach to the TV and choke the hell out of that woman. And every time I see that commercial,
you're not the only one. There's a lot of people that feel that way about that damn Popeye's commercial. You know, it's crazy. You're right. That damn commercial is, and I'm sorry, Trice, but I'm going to say it. It's fucked up. But anyway, yeah.
Oh, my God. That is, like, red. I need to woosah right now.
Oh, come get my crackling. What they say? Oh, come and get my crackling pieces of, you know, the pieces of chicken that's left that didn't make it on the bone and shit. They got this, she got her selling that and everything. You know,
they're delicious.
You know what?
Yeah,
it's
terrible.
It is
you know what it reminds me of? Oh, I'm
crazy.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No problem. Like, it's very weird that you can get dark-skinned people to sell everything. Busted up shoes. But for some reason, if you've ever looked at the models that model these, you know, these fabulous clothes or do these cover girl commercials, you don't really have too many light-skinned women. But I'm surprised Queen Latifah made it up here, but she's a leader in her industry right now.
Right.
But it begs the question, why is it that a dark-skinned person can sell chicken and weed? A light-skinned person can sell something like a fancy car or something that's
or Pepsi, like Beyonce.
For everybody, a very commercialized product. Why is that?
Because the thing is, let's be honest, whenever they see somebody dark-skinned, they're only marketing to a specific section of the audience. It's no different than why you catch a lot of authors not putting their main characters as dark characters. Because then, all of a sudden, you limit your audience. Oh, it's a dark-skinned character? Well, you know, I can't relate. And that's the first thing that some people think when they're reading dark-skinned or when they see somebody dark-skinned on television. As soon as you put somebody light-skinned, now, even though there are a lot of white people that won't overtly say, okay, well, you know, I don't want to buy a product from somebody dark-skinned, they're a lot more lenient on somebody who's lighter-skinned. You know, say like your Beyonce, even your Halle Berry's. You know what I'm saying? They're more willing to put them on a marketing campaign because they're more relatable because they're not dark.
Right. And you know, the Church's Chicken commercial will always have somebody dark on it, will always be. Church's Chicken, anything like that will always be like that. Have you noticed? And they also have the stigma of the hairstyle now because they're trying to show the natural hair now. So every woman now all of a sudden is a natural hair wearer now all of a sudden. You know, I mean, everybody's got this puff hair on their head now. You know, they even got the little girls doing it now. And when they have a little girl on the show or on the commercial, when they do go that way. And then they have this music that's African, black sound. And if you notice, they always put these commercials on when it's a black show because they want to deal. What are they dealing with? They're trying to sell to the audience that's at that time. So, you know.
Well, think about this very briefly. You know, we don't see darker-skinned women in our popular media. We don't see darker-skinned women in videos, on TV. But when we do catch a darker-skinned woman, they make her dark as midnight. And then put like, super bright lipstick and all this crap on her so that she doesn't even look like a person. She looks like a caricature, like a mammy. You know what I'm saying?
They still want to have that the stigma of the blackface that they used to do back in the day. And some of this, they do that. They're still trying to bring the slapstick. And that's why, you know, I know everybody gets on me about the Tyler Perry thing. I'm not trying to dog him, but some of the characters he has is slapstick. But anyway, I'm going to leave it alone. But anyway, but what I'm saying is it's just, you know, I hate to see that our chocolate women don't get the right deal that they should get because they always get the wrong deal. And the black men, too. They can't get the good role unless they're playing a drug dealer or something or whatever, you know, or a maid or somebody like that. You know, Viola Davis and all them was on the other night, and they were talking about that. The roles they get, they got to fight against each other because to be a maid in a movie, you know, I mean, the first woman to win an Oscar for supporting role or whatever, black woman, was a maid. She played a maid. So, you know, it was just Hattie McDaniel. I mean, we're just tired of being set in that. But that's what they want to do. They want to keep us in that. And I don't care how much money you got. And Michael Jackson can tell you that if he was still alive. All the money he had, it don't matter how much money you got. I don't care if you bleached your skin or whether he didn't or not. You're still a nigga. You're a rich nigga. That's all you are. Oprah can tell you that. When they dogged her that time when she was somewhere and they wouldn't let her in the store. Billionaire. Can't get in. So, I mean, it don't matter what you got. You're still black.
Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing
that light skin, dark skin, whatever. You know, go ahead. We got about 12 minutes.
Okay. the thing that I love about what Tyler Perry does is that he does have, you know, his own thing, and he employs black people. Now, I said that to say we as black people, it'd be wonderful for us to get together to start creating companies where we can put our own images out there, but we have to be very careful about the images that we put out there and the message that we want to send, because it starts with us. It really does. And beyond that, even if we don't have the economic power to do that now, let's start on a very grassroots, on a very organic level in the home. Every parent telling their child, whether they are Alabaster Cafe au lait or Midnight Coal Black, you are beautiful, period.
Yeah.
Who you are. Does it matter that you're black? Does it matter that you're mixed? It matters that you are just a beautiful child. And I think that when we start treating each other like that, I mean, again, kind of pie in the sky, but it's true. When we start embracing that, our basic humanity and who we are, then I think that's the only way we're going to be able to change.
Yeah.
Right. Let me say this one last thing about that, and then I'm going to let DD, because I know he's going to go with it. Even with Shonda Rhimes, with her beauty, her creativity, you know, the scandal thing is all big, but it's a dark woman with the white president looking around behind his wife's back. Why? You know, I mean, it just... You know, these things mess with, but everybody's every Thursday or whatever it comes on, they right there watching them have this infidelity going on. But if somebody was to do that in real life, what happens? They dog your ass. But they got this black woman fucking around with the president of the United States, which is a white man, and they're all into it.
But you know
anyway,
what? I will say this about Scandal. Scandal is so well written. I think because the writing is so strong on that show. I think that is what.
Yeah, well, I'm Grey's Anatomy. She did all those shows, so yes, she. I applaud her. Don't get me wrong. I applaud Tyler Perry. Don't get me wrong. I am not dogging him. I'm just saying that why does that character have to be that way? Well, I don't know if she originally made for a black woman to have that power. Maybe she wanted it though. But whatever, it's working. So you know. It's working, and that's all I'm going to say. But, Trice, I'm going to go ahead and give you a chance right now to go ahead and tell everybody again how to get your book, how to get your books, you know, how to contact you.
Look, man,
it's, say your Devi, we got 9 minutes. Can you get it out in four so I can give her a chance?
No, I can get it out in less than a minute.
Okay, go ahead.
As black people, we are our own worst enemy. We will turn around and shoot each other in the back and not support each other, no matter light skin, dark skin, you know, cocoa brown. We'll sit up there and criticize each other, right? But then we'll go and support the most ignorant things. Like, I was, before I even came on the show, I'm looking at all these housewives, the housewives show on ATL. How many people are talking about such ignorance?
Love and hip hop.
You know what I'm saying? And the thing is, we relish in that ignorance. So, and then we turn around and say, well, we want something, you know, better. Well, if you wanted something better, you wouldn't be indulgent in all that craziness. You know what I'm saying? At least not to the point where, you know, it becomes the topic of the day. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. Either you want to support something that is going to put you in a better light, or you don't. There's nothing wrong with a guilty pleasure. All right?
Right.
But at the same time, something that's, you know, they talking about somebody, people fighting and you know, some woman sleeping with some dude's husband and how exciting that is. The thing is, it's all ignorance. And until you decide, look, I'm done with this ignorance and I want something better for us. I want to see something better for us. I want something written better for us. And I want it done by us. People will never take you seriously, especially if you're not willing to support that.
Yeah, I agree with you, and that's the only thing I look at about it. Okay, make the money if you got to, but the thing is how you make it. You know, you say you make it a change. You know, I'm not saying you got to, you know, just make a change. Give us a better light of what we are portrayed of in the world instead of always got to be the only way we can get money is basketball or football or drug dealing or music industry. You know, I mean, come on, you know. I understand some of these shows have people that are doctors and lawyers, but they still, I mean, I don't know. It's just, I don't know how we can fix it. It's going to take a long time, and we may not even see it in our lifetime. But the thing is it's been going on for a long time. And racism, I mean, it's only been about, 55 years since Martin Luther King and all that stuff. So, I mean, you know, it's really not gone. You know, we want to act like it is, but it isn't. And it's really hurting within our own race. So now, with that, I'm going to let Trice go ahead and tell everyone how they can get her books on, if they want her to come to a book signing or whatever they need her to do. What's going on?
Well, again, thank you so much for having me on the show, and I'm so glad that we were able to have this discussion. I had a lot of fun, and I hope that the listeners did as well. And if you're interested in picking up my latest novel, Breaking All My Rules, you can find it at your local bookstore or library. Go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Target, Walmart. It's available wherever books are sold. And my books are also in Sam's Club, BJ's, and Costco. Let's see, what else? I have a lot of events coming up. I have something that I'm really excited about on July 27th called the Right Now Aspiring Writers Conference in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Please go to my website, TriceHickman.com, to get more information about that event and other events I'm going to be going to this summer and fall. And I have another book that's releasing in October called Looking for Trouble. It releases October 29th. Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
So. You are really changing it up, aren't you? You're going into it, ain't you? Okay.
I'm trying, Red. I'm praying and trying, and I'm very thankful and appreciative for all the readers who are supporting me and have been supporting me from the first book, and who are just now getting introduced to my work. So I encourage you to go out and just check me out, and if you like the book, spread the word and get books by other African American authors and support us. You know, as much as you can. We all appreciate it.
Yes, we do. And, Drinka, go ahead and tell everybody about how they can get your book.
Okay, well, you can find my book at my website, DrinkaArmstrong.com, all one word, first name spelled D-R-I-C-A. I'm available on Facebook. My newest book, Trust No One, is rising up the charts, so I'm definitely putting in work. Got a couple more books and projects coming up, which Red Snapper will be a part of one of those new projects upcoming, so I can't wait for people to hear him in a project I'm working on. Can't wait for it.
All right. Yeah, okay. Well, that sounds really good. And DV, you got anything that you want to say real quick before we, I ain't going to say before we prepare to close because it sounds like we in church or something. But,
pass the collection plate, son.
Yeah.
So, collection plate, please, and boom.
There you go. So, DV, you got anything you want to add to or anything that was discussed?
No, you know what? I enjoy having conversations, you know, sometimes that are not about relationships, but just about us, you know, and the things that we deal with. So, you know, I appreciate I'm glad you watched that show, man. I'm telling you, glad you watched the show.
Man, you know those kind of things interest me because I have a history and background in history, and I love the reconstruction of how we came up. And I, anything that's going to talk about our people, I want to, you know, get into that. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
But no, like, you know, because, like, if you think about this weekend, man, we're dealing with Nelson Mandela. We're dealing with Paula Deen. We're dealing with, you know, like I stated, the Afro Puffs natural hair thing at a school. You know, we're dealing with, you know, racial tensions, you know, that it's like being back in civil rights. Yeah, there's a little decorum, but people are mad and the kettle's boiling over. So, you know, it's nice.
And one thing that you didn't mention that we're definitely dealing with is the Trayvon Martin
thing.
Murder case.
Right.
And I'm telling you,
if that doesn't go the way it did.
And it was a whole bunch of controversy that came out of it, so I'm not even going to go into it because we only got 2 minutes. But there was a lot that came out today. I mean, the defense came out with a joke as an opening argument that they did. So you're going to have to go back and look. It's on HLN, Headline News. They're covering it. So you might want to go check that out. And I'm telling you, they're trying to make this into a circus. But, you know, if it doesn't come out the way we hope it comes out, or whatever your choice is, some people want him to get out of this, and there are some that feel that Trayvon was murdered and should have been killed, which I don't think nobody should die for whatever they do. But the thing is whatever the outcome, if it's not him going to jail, I'm telling you, it's going to be riots and all kinds of stuff going on. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I want you to stay tuned to this because it's really getting ugly. This reminds me of the OJ time. It's resurfaced again. So I'm just saying that. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and we're going to get ready to close out. But I thank you, Trice. I thank you, Drinka. I thank you all for coming on DV and all of us and having a great intellectual conversation this evening. And we'll be back next week, as we always do. And Trice, you know you're always welcome to come back. Drinka, you know you're always welcome to come. Anytime you got something going on, even if you don't, if you just want to step in, just want to talk, the door is open. Just come on.
Thank you.
And stay sweet, okay? Please stay sweet. We're going to go ahead on. Don't turn into some of them people that's out there.
Okay. Thanks, Red. Bye, everybody.
You guys have a good night.
Okay.
Good night.